Anyway, someone who's very familiar with the odd dab is Coleman Nocter here for our parenting slot. Coleman, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Right. First question is this. My almost 12-year-old keeps giving back chat. She is sandwiched between her 10-year-old brother and a 13-year-old sister. God, that's close. Who are probably better than her at sport and school. She refuses to do what she's asked, e.g. not wear eye makeup, tidy her room a little, dress warmly, etc. and takes the easy road. She says frequently, I have favourites, i.e. her brother, I am strict, and she does get into trouble more often. It also drives me nuts that she eats and spends her money on so much sugary food and sweets. I feel awful about it, and I'm worried I'm drifting from her. Her dad just says we wind each other up. What should I do?
Yeah, this is common. I mean, we often kind of get talk about sibling rivalry in the case of infants and small children. But I suppose when it's in this case, there's a different tone to this. I mean, I think for young people, visibility is a really important thing. So this kid is, she's sandwiched between someone who's stronger at sport, stronger at school. And so she has to form a way of creating some degree of visibility. And she's worked out that misbehaving or, you know, triggering her mother's buttons is a way to do that. And I mean, I would always say visibility is really important for lots of young people to secure that. When we feel watched and cared about, we feel safe. And it follows us up from infancy right the way through. And, you know, you'll notice in an anxious child who will want their mum to see them when they're, you know, climbing up the slide, they'll keep looking back to see if mom's looking, or if you've a visitor in the house, sometimes a toddler will actually turn your face with their hands to look at them. So this feeling of not being cared about is something about being forgotten. And children will find any means possible to secure visibility. And oftentimes, as parents, we are, you know, we're guilty of seeing bad behavior before we see good behavior. And so she's gotten into this way of securing visibility and attention seeking, I guess, by not doing what her mum tells her to do. And it's no surprise that she drives her mum nuts, because this girl is very attuned, I think, to what exactly her mum wants her to do and how she's, you know, wearing eye makeup and not dressing warmly enough, you know. And this is unfortunately a kind of a relationship that could continue in that vein if something isn't done about it, I guess. And I think it's up to the mum in this situation to try and change the soundtrack to that relationship almost. And I think in terms of trying to acknowledge that this girl has a place, she's trying to find her place in the world. She's a young adolescent, she's growing up. And, you know, there's this kind of sense of, you oftentimes see it in boys as well, a kind of a fear of failure, where a child doesn't want to behave or toe the line or study or try hard at something because they have it in their head that they're only going to be guaranteed second place because they have this sibling who's always going to win. So rather than try and be good and come second, they just won't try at all. And you'll see that a lot in, say, adolescent boys who maybe won't study because they have an older sister who got 6 A's in her leaving cert. And it's almost like, I remember, you know, Graham Norton said on the TV that when somebody asked him, you know, would you ever do Dancing in the Stars or on those things, he said, no, I prefer to sit at home and think I could do it better.
Yes.
And it's that kind of sense that if I don't try, then I won't fail. So you can kind of go through life being a bit of a misunderstood hero. That, you know, my mother would always say, Coleman could have done anything, only he was lazy. Do you know what I mean? And it's much better to have that than be seen as not enough. So if you go gusto at it and don't do as well as the others, then you're left feeling that that's the extent of my worth. And so the mum has to find something in this girl that's positive and good, and trying to really nurture that as opposed to the pitch battle, because that is a habit that will continue. And you sometimes see it, I guess, in close relationships where there's siblings or maybe twins can oftentimes find that kind of feeling a bit forgotten, that the other one's a bit stronger than me. And during adolescence, that really peaks. That can really eat away at your self-esteem. And I don't know any child who ever said, you know, comparing me to my siblings really changed my life. You know, where you say, you know, your brother never did that or your sister never did that.
Oh,
it is one of those just triggering comments that just, you know, you will, you know, rebel against that. So I guess I would sit down with this kid and I would try and change the tone of it. I would try and catch her being good. I would try and ask her about how she feels. And I suppose you bring this up in therapy a lot, and you might say to parents, your child feels a little bit invisible. And mum or dad will come out with, invisible, sure, I bring her to the matches and I bring her camogie and I'm sitting outside school discos for 2 hours. She gets as much as the rest of them. And what I'd say to you, you know, that's not her truth. or she sees it differently. So just acknowledge that she might feel that way and try and see why that might be and explore it a little bit more. But I would pick her battles, I guess, in terms of this and just try, as you're the adult in the relationship, just try and reframe it a little bit so that she can feel good about herself. I think there's a sadness in this kid's story a little bit because her mum describes her as not as good as the others at certain activities.
And maybe she's picked up. Well, she knows that, but maybe she's picked up on the mother's opinion of that.
I would be under no illusion that she would. And you know, children are hypersensitive, so they're picking up on certain things. And oftentimes, a comment or a gesture towards your value is seen as much more valuable than dropping your places or young people don't see that as necessarily a validating experience, a parental task, whereas they might see you did really well there today, or that was a good result in that test, or you know, it mightn't have been in the 80s and 90s like her sister, but for her to get that 65 might have taken a good bit of work, and she needs to be recognised for that effort as opposed to just the outcome.
Yeah, it's also a thing when they're that age is that they have a lot of the language, in the sense that she'll be able to. She's already said, "Your brother is the favourite because he's the baby and he's the only boy. I'm a middle child, and so the mother is going to be constantly on the back foot, having to deny things. You know, these charges. That's difficult to do.
It is, and again, especially when you know, like the parents will always deny that they have favourites. But I would always say the parenting is swings and roundabouts. There's going to be time where one of your children is doing a leaving cert, so they will get extra attention for those few months, and everyone will have to eggshell around them and don't talk when your brother's studying. And then when you're maybe ill or have flu, then people. It's not about having a 33, 33, 33 all the way. It's at different times, but this. This girl just feels that she's not getting her fair share of it. And she may well be, but it's about acknowledging that and trying to work with that. But you're right. I mean, the whole middle child syndrome can be something that is tagged onto people, but it can also be a stick to wave at your parents in that regard too.
Yeah, and another thing, because you did mention this in therapy, that the parents will say, but I do all these things. I know she's only 12, but she's on that process of growing up, and could that process of growing up be perhaps at least in part to accept that, to see the parent as well as an adult, rather than, you know, casting the parent in it's their fault because they haven't.
Oh yeah, and I think the conversation is about that. It's about saying, you know, I know you feel that way. What would make it different? How would you feel more validated by what I do? You know, and not measuring it into you do more for my brother than me, but actually, what do you need, regardless of your brother and sister? And how can I help you with that? I would think that this. I mean, there's of course there's people listeners out there who would say, you know, just tell his kid to cop on and get on with it. And of course you get that. I've seen this many times where a child doesn't feel that they have a voice, or they don't feel heard, or they don't feel listened to, and so they misbehave in response to that. And it is true, you know, the more I listen, the less you have to shout. And I think there is something about sitting down with this girl and having a chat with her, and rather than the discourse just being about tidying a room, and you know, because this could be a relationship that's just, and it sounds like from the mum, it's dominated by sanction and reprimand. This is the only engagement that this mum and daughter have. And again, mum is kind of feels bad about that, but I would just try and change the soundtrack of that. Try and have something different to talk about. And maybe this child, you know, give her what she needs rather than what she deserves. And I mean that by the way of, you know, that misbehavior, of course, it needs to be sanctioned and managed, and you'll do that. But there's another conversation that could happen in parallel to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And well, yeah, somebody's texting to say, leave her be. She's a teen. Let her wear the eyeshadow and eat what she wants. Let her be creative and express herself. Good God. Now, I don't know if that comes from a parent or not, really. But I suppose at the same time, maybe you know, there might be a bit of wiggle room for the parent in terms of picking battles about things that.
Yeah, I mean, adolescence is a battle for independence and dependence. It is, you know, it's you'll win one and I'll win another. And again, it is about working with that. And, you know, she is a preteen. She's going to be angsty. She's going to be moody and difficult and unreasonable. And, you know, within the realms of that, you're kind of working with an unreasonable person in some respects. But
because there is narcissism there for a period of years where they're. For teenagers, they're the centre of their own world.
For sure. Yeah. And that's protective in that sense. But there's also a lot of anxiety and worry and stress going on behind that. And, you know, I would often say, you know, the meaning behind behaviour is more important than the behaviour itself. You know, if your teenager comes down to you and they're going to get a bowl of cornflakes and they look over and see Sean eating the last bowl of cornflakes and there's none left, and they fling the bowl and the spoon across the room and say, "I hate my life," and storm out in the bathroom, the answer is not getting more cornflakes. The answer is asking what's going on and what's behind that. And sometimes we get so consumed by the behaviour, we forget to ask or think about what might be going on behind it. And adolescence isn't an excuse, but it sometimes can be an explanation for some of it.
I'm taking your advice about our eldest of three boys. He's 16, halfway through transition year. Our main concern is that he appears to have no friends. We moved 4 years ago, so he started at his all-boys school in first year with a lot of other new boys. He seemed to settle in well and talked about a few lads at school, but rarely went out to meet with them. Last year, he was focused on exams, did very well. He did have an issue with a bully last year, but this was dealt with very quickly by the school and, to our knowledge, has not recurred. He played team sports in first year, but this year has lost interest in this, and they said the other guys find him awkward and nerdy. There have been team days out and bonding sessions, which he has been invited to but has avoided. He likes drama and debating and is involved in these clubs at school, but doesn't chat or text or meet anyone from these clubs out of hours. I keep a check on the boys' phone usage as I pay the bill, and our eldest does not receive any calls or texts from anyone other than his immediate family. I know his lack of a social circle gets him down, especially as his younger brothers has many friends, but he's not depressed as such, and at school his teachers have not expressed any concerns. Perhaps they're being impatient and things will click for him later, but we are concerned that he's very lonely and this will have an effect on him. Oh God.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I mean, again, that's not uncommon. I mean, I think for any parent who has a child like this, it's important to establish whether they seek friendships or desire friendships. I mean, oftentimes, I can remember, you know, particular cases of pushing socialisation on a child who's just an introvert, and they're actually quite happy in that. Whereas this boy is saying, you know, it gets him down and he wants to be something, wants to be part of something more, but obviously mum knows that he's not and he's not getting invited to things. I would see more of this actually in the last few years, this difficulty of meeting up outside of school, that a lot of young people will struggle with that. And it seems to be that, you know, there's quite a sophisticated jump from primary school to secondary school, that junior circle cycle jump into, you know, the different sophistication of socialization in that realm is quite different. And then there's another leap in the third year to fifth year jump, which is, you know, it's moving from Minecraft and Marvel to kind of sex, drugs and rock and roll conversations. Yeah, yeah. So that's not, you know, not all young people are able to manage that pace of things and can kind of struggle where they wouldn't have struggled before as the scaffolding gets less and there's complex relationships going on. They can struggle a little bit that. I mean, for this boy, I mean, I think getting back to the idea of making friendships is difficult. And I think we have a lot of young people who perhaps have grown up in very structured activities. So a lot of their friendships have been manufactured through play dates and going to attend groups. Yeah. So the idea of kind of just sparking up a friendship and asking someone, do you want to go to the movies on the weekend? I mean, a lot of young people that I would see would struggle with that. You know, and that's it's a worry that I'd have, that you know, that kind of social banter piece, or being able to and our virtual neighbourhoods have never been bigger, but our actual physical neighbourhoods have never been smaller. You don't see that many young people just sitting on a green chatting, you know, and that says, and I think there is a loss in that. And I think for people who may struggle a little bit socially, who don't maybe have that confidence to nudge in, can sometimes be peripherised. And I think sometimes we often think school is huge, there's huge numbers there, surely you can find somebody, but sometimes there's a very predominant and culture in a school that if you don't fit into that, you can get pushed to the periphery as well. You know, say for example, if there's a dominant sporting culture or whatever, if you're not part of that culture, you can kind of struggle a little bit on the outside.
And it's an old boy school.
Pretty much. You know. But what I would do is I'd have a chat with this lad about trying to find people outside of school, perhaps that would have similar interests. You know, she mentioned he likes debating and things like that. There may be something, I don't know, speech and drama, something in an adolescent friendly. He's getting older. Where, you know, for the younger kids, there's lots of different kind of scouts and clubs and things like that.
Yeah.
For a lad who's in fifth year, there is a real lack of a social outlet that's a kind of a structured but unstructured format. And I would just support him to try and find ways in doing that. I've no doubt when this lad hits college and he goes to choose a course that he's interested in and finds like-minded people who have similar interests, that will be a much better environment for him. And I've seen so many youngsters struggle in school who flourish in college because they're doing a course that they like, they're sharing similar interests about film or politics, whatever it might be. And they can actually thrive in those situations. But that step up is hard. And I wouldn't, it's not, like, there is a strong drinking culture in teenagers as well. And I've had lots of young people who say, you know, I don't really drink, so I don't get asked to things, or I'm not into that, you know, going boozing in a field type of thing. So I'm going to not do that. And that kind of leaves me out of things as well. So, I mean, there may be very good reasons other than this boy to suggest why he might be struggling.
Maybe, could it be he's happy in his own skin and
quite
he's
possibly.
No great interest in it?
Quite possibly. I remember a case years ago of really pushing a social agenda with a lad, and he just turned around to me and said, I like being on my own. I find these, you're pushing me into situations that are stressful. Mm. And actually, I'm not unhappy. I like reading. I like, you know, doing my own thing. And it was an eye opener for me, because I know, you know, we have a kind of social construction that we all should have lots of friends and we should all be mixing. But for some people, that's not a pleasant experience, and they're actually content and happy to be on their own. And I think we need to let introverts be introverted if that's the case. And allow that to be, because he may be like that. I'm guessing from what Mum is saying here, he does get down that he doesn't have a... And I would wonder about, you know, she's checking his texts and things that he's not connected to. Possibly if he's into gaming, he may belong to a kind of an online gaming community.
He could, yeah.
There might be other things that he might be getting some outlet from. But I just think just support him to try and find other mechanisms, you know. And we don't all end up being best pals all our lives with people we went to secondary school with, you know.
No.
I wouldn't be friendly with anyone I went to secondary school with, but I'd be friends with all the people I got the 65 bus with, you know, in terms of that, you know. And again, they're kind of, we find our own niche and we find our own ways to make friendships. I wouldn't overly worry, but I certainly would support him with it.
Coleman Nocter is still with us for our parenting slot. We did have a question earlier on from a 12-year-old. She's the middle child, and a bit of friction between her and the mother. I wish someone had spoken to my parents about this. I was the middle child whose older sister got 600 points in her leaving, and it was younger sister played on Irish teams in sport. Crikey. I had no place. What was the point in trying anything when I would never attain their positions in sport in school? It took years, but she'll find her way. Try and support and encourage any positive changes she makes. It's very hard to not know where you fit. Another texter says, regarding the 12-year-old, maybe she could do more with her dad, and the mum should back off a bit. Sometimes mums are way too demanding. Dads tend to be less so, says Mags, who's a mum of three. And on the another person says, I'm middle-aged, and ever since my early childhood, I enjoy nothing more than being in my own company, which might sound odd, but not everyone is the same. That's they're referring now to the 16-year-old who doesn't have any friends. Another texter says, on the same subject, we moved from a few miles outside the town to the town when I was 16. This was a huge, wonderful change for me, even though it was because my parents had separated. It gave me huge access to my friends, who became even better friends. So I suppose it's kind of echoing what Coleman was saying, that a change in circumstance such as going to college may well bring about a huge change for that young man. Now, next question is, I'm with my husband 15 years and we have two children aged 2 and 4. He has two adult children, mid to late 30s, with whom he's been estranged since before I met him. I want to know how and when we should inform my children of their half-siblings. They're all living abroad and have no contact with us in Ireland. Crikey.
It's complex. I mean, there's two sides to that. I mean, one, you're wondering, are they, like, they're 2 and 4. Are they able to tolerate that bit of news and even have a concept of
what it
of
means,
having to,
yeah.
to what it means for them? And there's also, can they contain that news? You know, I think parents also wonder about, you know, will this end up in my weekend's news in school on Monday that I have two half brothers? You know, and so when you've small children, and I'm not suggesting this is a family secret, but it's probably something that it's probably private to the family that they may not want. So you're kind of juggling those two dilemmas of, and I've said it before, I don't know whether I've ever met a young person who felt over informed about something, but they tend to have an issue about not being informed about something. I would tend to drip feed this information as they're developmentally able for it. I don't think the 2-year-old needs to know anything right now and wouldn't even get it. But if you're talking about the kind of age of reason is kind of 7 to 11, where you can kind of introduce that concept, I wouldn't be too surprised if they were unfazed by that and it seemed kind of a distance to them. But they may have questions in teenage years where they might ask a little bit more complex questions about that. So, I mean, you give information at what a child can manage and what they can contain and what they can understand. And I think that kind of 7 to 12 12 is timely enough to introduce that. I wouldn't push it as an agenda because they'll come with their own questions in their own time. It's not like there's a practicality issue that they're running into these half-siblings in the street every day or anything. They're living in a different country, etc. But I'm not so sure they'd even understand that 2 and 4 being able to conceptualise what that is.
Though I suppose, I mean, an obvious question once they understand the notion will be, well, where are they?
Mm.
Can we meet them? And
yeah.
It seems like they can't meet them.
It wouldn't seem that way, yeah.
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 Which is tragic.
Mm.
I wonder what they... I mean, if... I know, okay, they're estranged from the father, but when you find out that you have 2 siblings...
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Would you not want to meet them?
Do they know that they have 2?
Yeah, do they know they have 2 siblings?
And again, if they're adult children, maybe that's something they might have the impetus to want to engage with. That's complex. I think it would come down to your own discretion and the circumstances of the relationships now. But from the child welfare point of view, I don't know whether there's a need to divulge at an age where they can't understand it. I would introduce it and answer their questions as they ask.
Right, next question. I don't think we've ever had on the parenting slot a grammatical problem, but this is one. I mind a 3-year-old who speaks constantly in the third party. For example, she says, Mary needs to go to the toilet instead of I. I try to talk to her normally, but her parents won't. Any ideas would be really appreciated.
Yes. I'll give it a stab at this. I mean, again, toddlers shouldn't understand the I or me till they're kind of 3, 4. So she's just at that kind of. And, you know, my own daughter is 4 and she would still say he and she for different. You know, they're not mastering pronouns at that stage.
Yeah.
But what we're kind of told is parents. Very kind of well-informed parents that we should tell our children what we're doing so that they learn. So oftentimes you'll get, Mommy is going for a shower now.
Yes,
and Daddy's
yeah.
And the child may just be mimicking that and saying, Mary's going for a play in the playroom or whatever. So it's oftentimes more encouraging the parents. This lady says she minds this child, so I don't think it's probably not her child.
Right, okay.
So
it's probably a literal interest. Yes,
yeah. And again, I mean, I wouldn't worry about this until this child was 4 or 5. I think the pronoun complexity is something she wouldn't be expected to have at this stage. But reading to her in the first person will help her to master I and bring her around social gatherings where there's other people having conversations. She'll pick that up. But it could well just be a mimicry issue because it was one of those kind of trendy parenting things to do was to call yourself daddy and mammy and explain everything in detail of what you're doing so your child learns to appreciate.
Yeah. Okay, a bit of a more serious one. My 5-year-old is being bullied at school. The teacher insists that she sits with the bully at the same desk to try and resolve the issue. Is this a good idea? My daughter certainly doesn't think so.
I've heard of this quite a bit recently. I'm not sure of the thinking behind it. I think they're 5 years of age. So they're very small. So perhaps that kind of social learning to help them to manage their relationship together may work. For me, it's a gamble, though. I think there's a lottery here. I think it depends on the severity of the bullying and the intensity.
Yeah.
If you're a child who's quite possibly at 5, filled with terror at this other child and you're made sit beside them, that might not work. Whereas if it's just a bit of banter and you're watching these kids and trying to teach them to engage better or have a better relationship, it may well be able to do that. I think if you're going to do it as a teacher, you need to be omnipresent to that table and make sure there's not whispering and things going on that you're not heard. You need to be able to teach 5-year-olds to create a good relationship rather than just leaving it to themselves to decide on that and to design it themselves. But I would say if this little girl is frightened and intimidated, maybe it's not the best approach. And I've had lots of parents contact me about this and saying, is this, you know, is it tried and tested? Does it work? I don't know that, but I suppose I can see the thinking behind it, that you're not trying to split and divide them. You're trying to get them to manage that relationship better. And in younger children, yes, that might be more appropriate or it might work. I would generally be nervous about the less dominant part of that duo.
Yeah,
I would struggle to call children bullies at 4 and 5. Because I think the intent is questionable. But I think from the point of view of if you're going to do it, you supervise it closely and make sure that they're creating good relationships rather than it being a kind of a trapped experience for the...
And you want to have the parents on board, I would have thought, or at least contact the parents and explain why you're doing this.
I think it's generally being contacted and explaining why they're doing it, as opposed to it being a consensus with parents.
Yeah.
That would be my experience of it. It does seem, maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems rather a new way of looking at this. I wouldn't have heard about it too much 10 years ago. But, you know, time will tell. Maybe it does work in some cases, but I do think there's a lottery in that.